Howdy, you found Music Heads presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks for dropping in. This is a roundtable discussion where a couple of colleagues and I get together each week and we have some fun talking about some of the new music we're playing on the station and to find out if it's working for us. I'm the host of the show. My name's Bill DeVille. I'll be talking today with our evening host, Mark Wheat, back from a long holiday.
I was going to say, thanks for giving me a long summer vacation. It's been good, but it's better to be back, though.
School's back in session, my friend. And Saturday morning host, David Campbell's in the house, too. Hi, David.
How are you guys doing today?
Rocking.
Doing good. Nice great. To have you back as well.
It's great to be here.
So let's just dive in. Sigur Rós is back with a new album. The veteran Icelandic post-rock band has been making albums since 1997. They're also known for their ethereal sound and for lead singer Jonesy Bergesen's lovely falsetto voice, singing much of the time in a made-up language. I've admired this band for years. There's no one else quite like them. They seem to have invented a musical genre all their own. The music has an earthy feel to me, and you think of thunderstorms, gentle rain, sunrises, and spring emerging. The new album is titled Methsuth I Adam with Speltum Antelist, which means, with a buzz in our ears, we play endlessly. If you want the official pronunciation, check their MySpace page. The album has a lot of firsts for Sigur Rós. It's their first recorded outside of Iceland. The band also uses producer Flood for the first time. He's worked with Depeche Mode, PJ Harvey, and most famously U2. The album contains more percussion and guitar than their previous effort, and much of it has a more free-spirited and fun feel than anything they've done. Dare I say it, much of it has a happy sound to it. Here's a little bit of their song Gobbledygook. Sigur Rós, the new album Methsuth I Adam with Speltum Antelist. Mark, is this working for you?
That's awesome. I just want to listen to you say that for days. Well done, Bill. Great
thank
introduction.
You,
I'm not sure I can add anything to it because all the elements are in there that you mentioned. And for me, it is working big time. As a fan like yourself for a long, long time, and I remember with the first couple of albums, like you say, it was almost like a new genre. They are totally unique. I don't think there's anybody else that sounds like them. And you often wondered, well, is anybody, you know, in terms of a mainstream or a bigger audience ever going to listen to this band? And it's been one of the great pleasures of the last year or so on the station to start getting requests for these guys and to start having people react to their music. And they've been touring the world and it seems like their audience is building and building and building, which is just nothing short of astounding to me. Why I think this album is interesting is because, in a sense, why they were so unique, why they sound totally different, I think is part of being isolated in Iceland. I think just geographically growing up, they must have not had the same kind of influences from media, from music as we did growing up and some of the independent bands that come out of the UK or America. And I think that crystallized into something unique. And what this is kind of like a travelogue. It's a document of them actually getting out of Iceland and traveling the world and being inspired by other folk, whether it's Flood the producer or whether it's other bands that they've heard that they've come across. And they've taken themselves outside of their box, their comfort zone, their own recording studio in Iceland and tried something new, and all power to them. And I think 75% of it works big time.
David, is this working for you?
Oh, absolutely. I think I first heard of this band when their second record came out back in 1999, and I was just in awe. The first track on there was this 9-minute meditation in pure beauty. And it's almost too much. It's almost scary. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I just didn't have the time for it or lost interest or wanted something a little bit more charging and didn't maybe investigate their stuff as much. And I've heard the last record lean toward the pop sensibility in all of us a little bit more too, but this one is downright playful, some of it.
Well, you get to the second half and it's a whole different ballgame, but the first half, definitely very playful, I agree.
It's still breathtaking and beautiful and fragile in all the ways that the previous records have been, but this one, there's some toe tappers on here. And I think there's room for that in my the version of Sigur Rós that I like most. The one thing that I keep thinking as I listen to this was I listen to this record sequentially was that each one was even more breathtaking than the last, yeah. Especially the tracks 5 and 7, especially Festival. I think it sounds like it was done in an old cathedral. 3/4 of the way through it, the entire capabilities of the organ, the church's organ, are used to build up this massive climax, and then it backs down to absolutely nothing again. With the
huge epic of a number.
This kettle drum comes in, and I love the sound of the drums. That's a new
Amina,
thing.
Amina, that's the group that's backs them up. These women that are percussionists, and they play all kinds of different glasses and stuff. It's really
right.
Cool to watch them.
It's never been as much in the forefront in their albums in the past, and I think it is. The sound of the drums is really special on this one, and a kettle drum just builds the pace of that track Festival to a crescendo, and then boom, down, and I think it ends with actually Jonsi just whistling, which is perfect. It kind of that massive climax thing that David says that they do so well. And I think if you want to give somebody an example of how Sigur Rós sound at their best, play them track 5 to start with.
Indeed.
If this band ever stops selling pop records or isn't interested in touring or playing the game, it seems like they could get a grant to do nothing but IMAX film soundtracks. Mm-hmm. The breadth of... I think of that in my head. When I listened to this all on my headphones today. I closed my eyes and all I could see is just the... sky and that sort of semi-slow motion helicopter right. Shot down the Colorado River, or the shark flying out, or whatever it is, it doesn't even matter, but this band was made to create sounds that work slowly and beautifully the same way nature does.
Well, that's kind of what they did with their last release, because the last release, Half Time, was the soundtrack to essentially a travelogue of their home, Iceland, and so that's kind of what they've done, and now they've moved on. Now they're making a pop album, which I think is awesome. And I don't know if they've done it deliberately, but they really are. You know, they made a couple of tracks on here that are pure pop singles that we can play on the radio. Because again, to champion this band, you always felt like, you know, putting them on the radio with just one track wasn't going to do them justice. And before I forget, again, the other thing I like about this as my ongoing theme is the death of the album, is that this album is an album. It's paced perfectly. It starts off with the first two tracks, which are really joyous and bouncy and summery, and then it stops and settles down and has minor climaxes through the middle, and then gently builds to track 9, which is just awesomely epic, and then settles down again and disappears to nothing in the last two tracks. It's perfectly paced.
Yeah, it's kind of like Sigur Rós. Here we are doing this new thing, but we're still Sigur Rós, because they come back to their bread and butter towards the end of the album. It's a nice piece of work, this whole thing is.
Agreed.
You're listening to Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. David Vanderveld is a multi-instrumentalist, producer, and songwriter originally from Western Michigan. This guy crafts 60s and 70s influenced pop songs. You can hear hints of the Beatles, Stones, Jackson Browne, the Eagles, Mark Bolan, and Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Vanderveld has worked on several projects with former Wilco multi-instrumentalist Jay Bennett. In 2007, he recorded his first album with the secretly Canadian label. That one was called Moonstation House Band. The brand new album is Waiting for the Sunrise. Much of the music has this easygoing desert rock sound popularized by both the Eagles and Poco. The album also shows a tougher, more ragged side popularized by Neil Young and Crazy Horse. This guy's not necessarily breaking new ground, but you know what? He's really talented. Check out the album's highlight, in my opinion. The song is called Someone Like You. New sounds from David Vanderveld. The album is called Waiting for the Sunrise. David Campbell, is this working for you?
Now, I sort of have a two-tiered review on this one. I got really into the Moon Station House Band album when that came out, which is hardly an album. I think it's only 8 tracks. But the single Nothing No I thought was incredible, which I think it was mostly a Bennett song. And I didn't actually know that until I did a little more reading that he was working with Jay Bennett, who...
Went bonkers in the film, I'm Trying to Break Your Heart.
When Bennett left Wilco, I thought, that's the part of Wilco that I really, really, really love. And how is that going to work out? And of course, they've gone on to do amazing things and they're the best band on the planet. But Jay, you can see Jay's influence on that first record. And apparently it took 2.5 years to produce. And there's layers upon layers of guitar parts and sitar and keyboards and things come in and out and disappear. And there's all this... verb on everything. It's just awesome. But it was very T-Rex-y. And now when I first popped this record on at the Fetus, which is not always the best place to listen to stuff, I was really disappointed. And it's the sentimental 70s pop stuff. But today I took another crack at it with the headphones, and I found complete joy in this album. I especially enjoyed on the song that we selected there, Someone Like You. I hear a lot of Gary Louris in this record, a lot of Jayhawks this record.
Sure, and the band.
And I hear a lot of Graham Parsons. The Stones thing too, but they're not. He's much prettier than the Stones ever were. Both physically, well, I don't know, Keith was a kind of a looker back in the day, but...
What do you mean, back in the day?
Have you seen the man lately?
Yes!
He should be in a museum.
Exactly.
It's a mellow record, but it's a beautiful record. And there's a lot of nice, like, easy Stone grooves on here. And I think that it's perfect that it's coming out when it is, especially in the Midwest here. This is sort of the setting sun of the summer season. And an album that's sort of light psychedelic pop fits perfectly with this time of year. If you dropped it in January, it just wouldn't feel right at all. And I mean, this is a sunglasses and tank tops kind of record. But there's also some of the classic sort of 70s themes of, you know, pills and bad behavior. Even on Someone Like You, there's a line, took some pills, sniffed some cocaine. Hey, you, what are you going to do about your wife and family too? And I don't even care what he's talking about, if it's personal or not. I just love the way this guy puts a song together and puts it down to tape. And in that way, I think this will be... I'll become as fond of this as I was of the first album.
Mark, just working for you?
No, but I hate to burst you guys' bubble, so I'll just shut up.
Hey, my review is mixed. I'm not done yet.
I'm not done. I am the same way as David. His first album had T-Rex all over it, and T-Rex is one of my favorite all-time bands, and so I was really excited when I saw his name on the list, and I wanted to hear this album, and I'm so not impressed with it. I have to say, I didn't give it a chance. Well, I did. I went back to it because the first time I made notes, I swear I put, well, track 6 might be okay. And then I just went back today to listen to track 6, and I'm not even going to give that an okay. I mean, you mention his mention of cocaine. He has the audacity to rhyme cocaine with brain. Now, David, if you're going to...
I didn't say he was a good lyricist.
And Lying in Bed. Track 9, which I've seen in some reviews listed as one of the best, has I'm Lying in Bed, I Hear the Voices in My Head.
Mm-hmm.
Lying in my bed.
I'm sorry, guys. As a lyric guy, I'm just going to have to come clamp down totally on this. And unfortunately, actually, it reminded me of the Music Heads a couple of weeks ago when you guys were talking about James Hunter.
Yeah.
And I think it was the other David who said James made him wish to go and listen to some of the bands that he sounded like. I'm the same way with David, but he does sound like the Eagles, which is one of my most hated bands of all time. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to give him another chance.
David Vanderveld is a great argument for guys working with people who are more... lyrically strong. I don't think every artist or every singer and performer should write all of his own lyrics. I think using, you know, a Van Dyke Parks or whoever to get the job done, understand and identify what you're going for, and then find somebody that can help you write in that style. But otherwise, you're going to end up rhyming things like, what did you say, head and bed or bed and head? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, head and bed and cocaine and brain.
And he covers a lot of it up by putting so much fuzz on everything that you can't understand what he's saying.
Well, yeah, the song you didn't like there, Mark, I happen to just love because it's got this great Neil Young and Crazy Horse style jam going on. It's like, to me, you can't go wrong with
something
like that.
Oh, the guitar like work on Line of Bed? Yeah. Massive.
The guitar line is diddly, iddly, diddly, and I'm just like, I want to hear someone who can really play guitar.
Neil Young's going to come after you there, Mark.
No, I'd like to hear Neil Young because, you know, that's the point. It's like it's been done better and it's not bringing anything new. And so,
I'll agree with
just
you there.
Me.
There's not a lot of new.
It's not my style. It's not my style. So, like I said, I shouldn't burst bubbles.
And the one that I didn't care for at all is right out of the gate, track number one. I'm hearing I Can't Tell You Why, Timothy B. Schmidt and the Eagles on track number one. I'm sorry. That one does not work for me at all.
I won't give. I'm not sure about the Eagles comparisons, but then again,
Seals and Crofts.
I didn't live, and I think that's a far more lightweight bubblegum version of what's going on here. Like this stuff is in some ways musically really dirty. I think it's sludgy, and there's a lot of sort of heavy grinding psych stuff in here. But it's done in a completely pop way, and in that way, I don't see any of the Eagles stuff. The Eagles were a straight up country rock band,
sure.
But there's tracks on like Crying
what do
you
mean,
like
were?
Are. That band is dead to me, Mark. But I can definitely see what you guys are saying. He's not he's reinventing the wheel. He's not doing something completely innovative in any way, I don't think.
You're listening to Music Heads, presented by 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Silver Jews are a veteran indie rock meets alt country outfit, originally from Hoboken, New Jersey. They were formed by David Berman, along with Pavement Steve Malkmus and Bob Nastanovich. They've also been called a Pavement side project. There actually were a band before Pavement. David Berman remains the only constant member. Silver Jews were always a vehicle for the songs of Berman. The band is basically countrified indie rock featuring the dark and twisted wit of David Berman. He's also, by the way, a published poet. The band's sixth album is called Lookout Mountain, Lookout Sea on Chicago's Drag City Records. Here's a song called Suffering Jukebox.
While these seconds turn these minutes into hours of the day, while these doubles drive the dollar.
Silver Jews, the new album, Lookout Mountain, Lookout Sea. Mark, is this working for you?
Well, as the resident lyric guy on Music Heads...
Well, this is the band for you, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I know. This guy is a poet, literally. I mean, the lyrics are poetry, and that's what draws me to this band. Just unbelievable lines. Some just stop me dead in my tracks, how great they are. Like the opening line... of standout track for me, San Francisco BC, which is long and a little weird in its content, so we probably wouldn't play it on the radio, but it starts off with romanticism is the douche of the bourgeoisie.
That's the greatest line ever.
I know!
I picked that one out, too.
No!
Can I carry on with that song for a moment here? We had sarcastic hair. We used lewd pseudonyms. We got a lot of stares in the street back then.
Awesome.
Old San Francisco, San Francisco, BC. I lived with my true love and she lived with me. Romance is the douche of the bourgeoisie was the very first thing she imparted to me. We had sarcastic hair, we used lewd pseudonyms. We got a lot of stares on the street back then.
He's a storyteller too. I mean, again, as a poet, sometimes poets can play with the words and how beautiful they are and set something up that doesn't go anywhere. Especially on this album, he's telling stories about, well, you don't know if it's him, but about two characters in San Francisco there, which is almost as deep as something like Pulp Fiction. It's got this kind of gangster thing going on. And then Aloysius, the bluegrass drummer, who has got a girlfriend strung out on street fat, which is just
awesome.
Yeah, there's
a bizarre lyrics in that song. She was a hardcore gobbler and a longtime guzzler of hydrogenated crap.
That's priceless. So you could go on and on quoting lyrics. And again, musically, this band, sometimes I used to get steered away from this band because I thought they were almost too much of an indie hipster.
There you go.
You've got to know about this band, you know. Oh, you know about Pavement. Well, you should know about Silver Jews. And that kind of put me off them for a long time. And it's interesting that they never used to tour either, because David Berman was teaching for a long time at UMass. I'm not even sure if he still is, but he's started to tour now, and it seems to have had an effect. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and saying that Silver Jews fans who know this band might think this is a little bit of a strange album. I think he's having more fun, and I think he's being more direct, because I think the influence of going out and playing in front of a live audience has actually affected his writing style, where he's can't be too clever, and you've got to give him some laughs, because, to be honest, he was really dark in some of his past, and now there's a lighter tone and there's a lot more fun in this album.
David Campbell, is this album working for you?
He's a poet, but he's not a singer.
No, his vocals are an acquired taste a little bit.
I've never listened to another Silver Jews record, which makes me I'm not an indie hipster music, but I don't know anything about it. So this was, I thought about going back and trying to listen to previous five records or whatever and try to give it some context, but I thought, no, for this one, it might be best to just leave it as is and come at it completely raw. I'm a huge fan of the way that what they do musically on the album. I think his band is outstanding, and I think his old bandmate or current bandmate, depending on the status of Malcolmus in this band, is a great example of a guy who doesn't have an extraordinary vocal range but does a lot with it. Malcolmus is not a naturally gifted great singer in the classical sense, but he uses his voice in a way to get a certain aesthetic, and I feel like David doesn't pay any attention to it at all, or just doesn't care to. And it's his choice; he can do whatever he likes. And I think it's just fine. And I'm happy that some people really get into it. But I'd rather read a book of his poetry. And I didn't know that he actually had some out there, because that was going to be my big joke at the end of it all, and then he stole that right away from me. I thought there was some cool stuff on this, especially Suffering Jukebox. I love the female backing stuff, and the way that they put the album together, I thought was really nice. And occasionally I did catch a line or two, but I was sort of in the way Destroyer doesn't work for me. I was distracted a lot of the time by the way that this guy phrases.
This guy's voice is more natural than the dude from Destroyer, though, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's more, definitely contrived, but in the same way, it grated on me. And so I had a hard time getting into this one, and I think I'd prefer it on paper. Vanderveld needs to hire Berman.
There you go.
I got to throw one more lyric out there. Pain works on a sliding scale, so does pleasure in a candy jail. True love doesn't come around anymore than fate allows on a Monday in Fort Lauderdale.
He's got a way, man.
Yes,
that's
he does.
Awesome.
You cannot deny that.
True love doesn't come around anymore than fate allows on a Monday in Fort Lauderdale. I came all this way to see your grave, to see your life is written paraphrase. I have tried the it is written in the furnace of affliction. This is what you couldn't face. Life in a candy jail with peppermint bars, peanut brittle bunk beds and marshmallow walls.
All right, it's now time for the portion of the show where we invite you to get involved. We ask you to tell us your honest stories about music and its place in your life. We ask a different question every week. My guests and I will start it off, then invite you to join in with your story online. Today's question, what's the worst, most obnoxious, most overrated, etc., classic rock song ever? David Campbell.
Rock and Roll All Night by Kiss.
Fair enough.
Really?
I'm torn with Kiss. I love Ace Frehley. Mostly, I like looking at him. I like looking at all the old pictures. I even like him once Peter Criss left the band, and there's you can find video footage of I Love It Loud, and Paul Stanley's rolling around the ground, and Kiss is Ace is in this jumpsuit. But I can't stand Gene Simmons and everything I've heard him say.
He is one of the grossest human beings in the face of the earth.
Disgusting.
Yeah, yeah.
And Paul Stanley, he's just right behind him in the line of super disgusting human beings. And so between the two of them, I just can't stomach that song one more time. I thought long and hard about this because really pretty much anything that's like big hit classic rock stuff, I can find a place for in my heart. But this is one that I just never need to hear again.
Fair enough. Mark.
I had a problem with this question, so I thought I'd take on the big one. If there's a bustle in your hedgerow, don't be alone there. It's just a sprinkling for the May Queen. I think Stairway to Heaven has got to rank up there as me personally, a lifelong Led Zeppelin fan who go down and say they are the band that I love more than any.
Do you got a bustle in your hedgerow or what?
Exactly. You picked it right out
Bam.
There. I'm like,
Bam.
You know what? This is like perfect for people who say, oh yeah, those hippies, they get around a campfire, smoke too much hash, and start seeing pixies in the hedgerow. That's exactly what we've been fighting against all of these years, and that song just goes on and on and on, building up the stereotype. The band didn't even want to play it when they came. This is how weird this is, because as an Englishman, when I came to America, I don't know if you know any, you'll realize this, but it's not the biggest Led Zeppelin song in the UK. It's not as far as the band are concerned.
That was an America thing, huh?
It's totally an American thing. And the way classic rock stations are here, I mean, seriously, and I don't listen a lot, but do they play any others? I mean...
Oh, yeah, they play tons of Zeppelin, but you can hear Stairway to Heaven once a day.
Exactly. That's craziness. I mean, Kashmir, I can understand for the
sure.
epic quality of it, but yeah, I'd really love them to be known for their more rootsy, rockin', bluesy, inflected stuff, and not Stairway to Heaven.
All right, my turn. I think you guys, I know Seal might even know. Our producer doesn't know?
No.
Is this Sticks again? Are you going to have Sticks again?
No, just Jill Riley knows. She might be the only one.
Do you remember when they played that song here back in the day that they edited in a local DJ? Because, you know, there's the DJ in the middle of that part,
yeah,
and
yeah,
they'd
yeah,
edit,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
hey, this is Tony Fly, and you're looking, yeah, right here on blah, blah, blah.
But can you just, it just cracks me up. Think about the Jefferson Airplane and the Summer of Love, and think about all those old hippies and the hate. And this song comes along. Say you don't know me. Recognize my face. Say you don't care who goes to that kind of place. First off, the guy had the singer of the song, Mickey Thomas, had no connection whatsoever with the old Airplane or anything like that.
Still touring, by the way, as Starship.
But I still think it's the worst song ever to hit classic rock radio. And Grace Slick was right when she retired from music and said it's a young person's game and I'm never coming back to sing any of these songs. That one in particular, you know, way to go, Grace. But worst song ever, bar none. Well, those are our answers. What's the worst, most obnoxious, most overrated, etc. classic rock song ever? Tell us your story online. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads. Then follow the links to join the discussion online. In this episode, we discussed the Silver Jews and their new album, Lookout Mountain, Lookout Sea, Sigur Rós, Mathsuth, Eadem, With Spaeltim, Antilist. And David Vanderveld, Waiting for the Sunrise. I want to thank Mark Wheat for joining me for Music Heads.
That was huge. Can I do it again?
You can sure do it again, and it was sure good to have you back.
Thanks.
David Campbell, thank you for joining me for Music Heads.
Thanks for having me, sir.
It's a wrap. Subscribe to the podcast of the show by clicking on Music Heads when you go to thecurrent.org. The program is produced by Steve Seal. Michael Wells is the podcast production coordinator, and Julia Schwenkler manages the show's online discussion, which we want you to be a part of. Go to thecurrent.org and look for Music Heads, then follow the links to join the discussion. I'm Bill DeVille from 89.3 The Current from Minnesota Public Radio. Music Heads, is it working for you?